This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Before I begin, I want to chat about an anonymous survey I'm taking of my listeners. I hope you'll participate because your participation helps me to get sponsors. Just go to PersonalLifeMedia.com and click on the listener survey ad on my show page and episode pages. Please take a moment to click over to PersonalLifeMedia.com and take my listener survey. Thanks so much for supporting your purpose-centered life. Today's is the ninth and last episode in a series called Handling Toxic Criticism. In this series, we look at the terrible toll that criticism takes, how it interferes with your ability to live your life purpose, and what you can do to reduce the effects of criticism in your life. Today's episode is called Silencing Self-Criticism. Let's begin. What is the relationship between the criticism you receive and the criticism you inflict on yourself? Why do so many people inflict daily doses of self-criticism upon themselves in neurotic ways, that is, in ways that are patently unjustified, unhealthy, and self-sabotaging? To what extent does a penchant for self-criticism turn uneventful episodes of minor criticism into toxic, wounding events? These are the tangled matters we examine today. Criticism arises because human beings have opinions, make judgments, carry grudges, and act cruelly. You may get criticized simply because an angry shopkeeper needs someone to lash out at, and because you are wearing a turban today, it is you. Criticism arises because of supply and demand, competition, and for reasons having to do with survival and scarce resources. You may get criticized because a magazine can only accept one of the several hundred stories it receives, and so rejects you in the natural course of doing business, which rejection you interpret as criticism. Criticism arises because human beings set up social systems and adopt roles. The policeman who stops you has to criticize you for going 70 miles an hour when you are supposed to be going 65, even though he himself goes 70 all the time. The structure of human personality, the structure of human organizations, and Darwinian dynamics of competition and survival cause criticism to pour in. We exist in a sea of criticism. Advertisers subtly criticize us for the smells in our house, which their product will eradicate, for the yellowness of our teeth, which their product will eliminate, for toying with the lives of our children by not buying their safe tires or their safe car. For a full 20 years, if we do some graduate work, in addition to elementary school, middle school, high school, and college, teachers are there to criticize us by grading us as imperfect and by kindly or caustically pointing out our lack of knowledge and our lack of ideas. Parents often do little else but criticize their children, noticing their children only when they are making noise, not eating their peas, wasting hard-earned money, or not doing their homework. This is the human psychosphere, the psychological bubble that surrounds our every move, one saturated with criticism. There are two basic reactions with a million variations to this avalanche of criticism. One child who is repeatedly told you are too loud will internally respond with the expletive deleted you. A second child will respond with I must be too loud. The first child runs around like a madman being as loud as he can be, and the second child becomes meek and quiet. The first child grows a lax conscience, maybe, if he grows a conscience at all, and becomes the next sweatshop magnate or ruthless politician. The second child grows a punitive conscience, becomes a self-critic, and in the natural course of events, is likely to be meekly bullied or controlled by that first child, who is now his pastor, boss, or president. In this oversimple model, one person becomes relatively conscienceless and another person becomes a fierce self-critic. By virtue of the interaction between the criticism she received in her formative years and her particular personality, each individual more inclines towards sociopathy or self-flagellation. If she has become even just a mild self-critic, she will continue to criticize herself in the absence of any new criticism from the world, and she will take the information she receives from the world as new opportunities to criticize herself. In order to eliminate self-criticism, it has to make sense to you to eliminate self-criticism. As long as you hold it as sensible to criticize yourself for making this or that mistake, or for failing yourself in this or that way, you will continue to criticize yourself. The alternative to self-criticism isn't denial or a merry relinquishment of power and control. You don't say, "I never make mistakes," and you don't say, "Yes, I haven't done the things I wanted to do, but that must be what the universe wanted of me." The first is denial, and the second is slavishness. Instead, you say, "I haven't done the things I wanted to do," and you end that with a full period. You name the truth, feel the pain if there is pain, but refrain from criticizing yourself. Then you continue with, "And?" You name the truth, and then you ask yourself what you want to do. What if the truth is just too awful, that by failing to carefully watch your child, she was run over and got killed? That by acting out for a split second with a choreographer, you ruined your chances for a dance career? That all the writing you have done for the past 15 years has been irredeemably bad? Even if the truth is this horrible, self-criticism adds on nothing of value. "I acted out and ruined my chances" is bad enough. How have you helped yourself by adding, "And let me beat myself up about that until the end of time"? It is important that we separate the pain we feel because something happened from the activity of criticizing ourselves. If every time you experience this pain, you mentally move to guilt and self-chastisement, you are making a mental mistake of the most horrifying kind. Our job is to keep a thought, any thought, like, "I am fully 40 pounds overweight," from turning automatically into self-criticism, and also to keep a feeling, any feeling, pain, anger, envy, resentment, disappointment, from triggering self-criticism. We are so used to moving from a certain kind of thought and a certain kind of feeling directly to self-criticism that separating them at the hip may feel impossible. But until you can do that, you will live a half-incapacitated life. It is hard, verging on impossible, to effectively handle criticism if you regularly turn information from the world into self-criticism. Insofar as you are prone to criticize yourself, you will also be prone to interpret innocent or neutral comments as criticism, to magnify the importance of mild criticism, and in a variety of ways, pile criticism on your own head. Honesty and self-criticism are two different things. An honest appraisal of a flaw leads to useful action, self-forgiveness, or some other beneficial outcome. Criticizing yourself for the flaw leads to inaction and depression. There is nothing noble or righteous about self-criticism. Let it go. That ends today's show. I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that you'll tune in next week for another episode of Your Purpose-Centered Life. If you subscribe to Your Purpose-Centered Life, you won't miss a single episode. To subscribe, please visit personallifemedia.com or look for Your Purpose-Centered Life in iTunes. You might also want to visit my blog, where many guest correspondents write about issues of interest in the secular humanist, skeptical, free-thinking, existential, and atheist traditions. My blog is available at the personallifemedia.com website. If you'd like to drop me an email, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is eric@personallifemedia.com. And I hope that you'll visit my website to learn more about my books and services. To visit, please head over to ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. Oh, and a last reminder about the anonymous survey I'm taking of my listeners. I hope you'll participate. Just go to personallifemedia.com and click on the listener survey ad on my show page. Thanks so much for supporting Your Purpose-Centered Life, and thank you for listening.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.